From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. Tell Your Fortune by Robert Block. The skills aren't here anymore. Look, Buster, I don't want any trouble. I run a nice, quiet little place here. No rough stuff. I'm telling you, the scales aren't here. You must be the 20th guy this week who come in looking for those scales, but they're gone. Damn good thing, too, if you ask me. No, I'm not the bouncer. I'm the manager. So help me, I am. If you're looking for Big Pipe Moscow, he's gone. Torelli's gone, too, and the girl. Didn't you read about it in the papers? I thought everybody knew it by now. But like I said, guys keep coming in. The heat was on here for a month before I bought the place and made the fix. Now, I run it strictly on the percentages. I level with the customers, not like Moscow with his crooked wheels and the phony cubes. Look, the house over, no wires, no gimmicks. You want to make a fast buck at the table? You get your chance. But the sucker stuff is out, and I wouldn't be caught dead with those scales in here. After what has happened. No, I don't think you're nosy. I'll take that drink, sure. Might as well tell you about it. Like I say, it was in the papers, but only part of it. Screwiest thing you ever heard of. Matter of fact, a guy needs a drink or two if he wants to finish his story. If you come in here in the old days, then you probably remember Big Pete Moscow, all right. 6'4", 300 pounds, built like a brick back house, with that Polack haircut and the Bastion nose. Don't like to give anyone the finger, but it looks like Pete Moscow had to be that big to hold all the meanness in him. Kind of a guy they'd have to bury with a corkscrew too, but a very smart apple. He come here about 3 years ago, when this pitch was nothing but a combination tavern and bowling alley. A mom and pop setup, strictly for Saturday nights and a beer license. He made his deal with the county boys and tore out the bowling alley, put in this layout downstairs here, and hired a couple of sticks to run tables. Crap games only at first. A fast operation. But Moscow was a smart apple, like I say. The suckers come downstairs here and drop their bundles, 1, 2, 3. Moscow, he stayed upstairs in the bar, and made like your genial host. Used to sit there in a big chair, with a $10 smile plastered all over his ugly mush, offering everybody drinks on the house when they come up from the cleaners. And everybody kid him about how fat he was, and how ugly he was, and how dumb he was. Moscow dumb? Let me tell you, he knew what he was doing. The way he worked it, he didn't even need to keep a bouncer on the job. Never any strong arm stuff, even though business got good and some of the country club gang used to come out here and drop maybe a G or so at a time on Saturdays. Moscow saw to that. He was the buffer. A guy got a rimming on Moscow's tables, but he never got sore at Moscow. Moscow stayed upstairs and he kidded him along. Show you how smart he was. Moscow played up his fatness. Played it up so he could be ribbed. Did it on purpose, wearing those big baggy suits to make him look even heavier, and putting that free lunch in front of himself when he sat at his table at the end of the bar. Moscow wasn't really what you call a big eater, but he kept nibbling away at the food all evening, whenever somebody was around to look. Suffered something awful from indigestion, and he used to complain in private, but he put on a good show for the marks. That's when he got a scale put in the tavern. To begin with, all a part of Moscow's smart act. He used to weigh himself in front of the suckers, made little bets, Finn or a Sawbuck, on what he weighed. Lost them on purpose, too, just to make the marks feel good. But that was an ordinary scale, understand? And Moscow was running an ordinary place, too, until Torelli came. Seems like Moscow wasn't content just to rim suckers on the dice tables. If his appetite for food wasn't so good, he made up for it in his appetite for a fast buck. Anyhow, when he had the bowling alleys ripped out downstairs, the carpenters built him a couple of little rooms way in back, rooms to live in. Of course, Moscow himself lived upstairs over the tavern. These rooms weren't for him. They were for any of Moscow's private pals. He had a lot of private pals, old buddies from Division Street in Chicago, fraternity brothers from Joliet. Any Lamster was a pal of Moscow's when the heat was on. If he had the moolah to pay for hiding out in one of those private rooms downstairs, Moscow picked up a nice hunk of pocket money hiding hot items. And I guess he had visitors from all over the country staying a week or a month in his place. Never asked about it. You didn't ask Moscow about such things if you wanted to keep being a good insurance risk. Anyhow, it was on account of those rooms that Torelli come here. He was out of Havana. Illegal entry, of course. But he wasn't a Cuban. Itai? Maybe, from the looks of him. A little dark customer with gray hair and big brown eyes, always grinning and mumbling to himself. Funny to see a squirt like him standing next to a big tub of lard like Moscow. I saw him the day he arrived. I was working for Big Pete Moscow then, bouncing and keeping the customers quiet. Moscow never talked about his little private deals, handling hot characters in the back room, and I clammed up whenever I was with him. It was strictly business between us. But even though I kept my mouth shut, I kept my eyes open, and I saw plenty. Like I say, I saw Torelli arrive. He got off the 5-spot bus right in front of the tavern, just at twilight. I was out from switching on the neon when he ambled up, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Pardon, can you inform me if this is the establishment of Signor Moscow?" I gave him a checkup, a fasty, funny little guy about the size of a watch charm, wearing a set of checkered threads. He carried a big black suitcase, holding it stiff arm in a way that made it easy to tell he had a full load. He wasn't wearing a hat. His gray hair was plastered down his head with some kind of perfume or tonic on it, which smelled like DDT. It was probably just as deadly. "Inside, Buster," I told him. "Pardon?" "Moscow's inside. Wait, I'll take you." I steered him towards the door. "Thank you." He gave me the big grin, full 32-tooth salute, and lugged the keister inside after me, mumbling to himself. What he could possibly want with Moscow, I didn't know. But I wasn't being paid to figure it out. I just led him up to Big Pete behind the bar and pointed. Then I went outside again. Of course, I couldn't help hearing some stuff through the screen door. Moscow had a voice that could kill horseflies at 500 feet. He talked, and Torelli mumbled something like this. "Finally made it, huh? Rico fly you in?" Mumble, mumble, mumble. "All set. Where's the cash?" Mumble, mumble. "Okay. Stay as long as you want. Rico tells me you can do a few jobs for me, too." Mumble, mumble, mumble. "Brought your own equipment, huh? That's fine. We'll see how good you are, then. Come on. I'll show you where you'll bunk. But remember, Torelli, you stay out of sight when customers are here. Don't want you to show your profile to any strangers. Just stick downstairs and do what you're told, and we'll get along fine." That told me all I needed to know except what Torelli was going to do for Big Pete Moscow while he hid out from the lawn to basement back rooms. But I found out the rest soon enough. A couple of days later, I'm downstairs stashing liquor in a storage room, and I come back through the crap table layout. First thing I see is a couple of roulette wheels, some big new tables, and little Torelli. Torelli's sitting on an orange crate right in the middle of the wheels and furniture, and he's having himself a ball. got a mess of tools laying around, and a heap more in his big black suitcase. He's wiring the underside to the tables and using instruments on the wheels, squatting on this crate and grinning like a gnome in Santa Claus's workshop. I am mumbling to himself, and I figure it's only sociable. I should stop by and maybe case the job a little. He pays me no attention at all. Just keeps right on with his wiring, soldering connections, and putting in some small batteries under the wheels. Even though he grins and mumbles, I can tell when I watch his hands that Torelli knows what he is doing. The little foreign character is a first-class mechanic. I watch him slip some weights under the rims of the three roulette wheels, and it's easy to see that he's bored holes through them for an electric magnet below the zero and double zero, and then, wham! Something smacks me in the back of the head, and I hear Big Pete Mosco yell, "What do you think you're doing here? Get out before I break your lousy neck." I took the hint and ducked, but I learned something again. Big Pete Mosco was putting in three crooked roulette wheels, and business was picking up. Sure enough, less than a week later, the tables were stalled and ready for action. I kept out of the basement as much as possible, because I could see Mosco didn't want anybody around or asking questions. I made it my business to steer shy of Torelli, too. There was no sense asking for trouble. It must have been all of 10 days before I saw him again. This was just after the wheels were operating. Mosco brought in two more Sharpies to run them, and he was taking them into town one afternoon, leaving me and the day bartender on duty. I went downstairs to clean up, and I swear I wasn't getting my nose dirty. It was Torelli who started it. He heard me walking around, and he come out from his room. "Pardon," he says. "Pardon, Signor." "Sure," I said. "What's the pitch?" "He's no pitch. It's only that I wish to explain that I'm sorry I make trouble between you and Signor Mosco." "You mean when he caught me watching you?" "That's all right, Torelli. He loses his temper. I'm used to it. Guess I shouldn't have butted into his business." "He's dirty business, dirty." I stared at him. He was grinning and nodding, but he wasn't kidding. "Futhi," he grinned harder. "I hate of myself that I do these for Signor Mosco. For cheating people. He's filthy that I, Antonio Torelli, would come to such an end." "Take it easy, Buster. We all gotta live." "You call these thieving?" He shrugged at me, at the tables, at the cellar, at the whole damn world. "I come to this country to make new life. Rico," he tells me, "I can do good here. Signor Mosco, I pay him the monies. He will arrange. He's no good. I am, how you say, without help. I must do as Signor Mosco tells. He discover I am craftsman. He makes me do these dirty work." "Why don't you blow out of here? Then, I mean, it's none of my business, but why don't you just scram right this afternoon? Either Mosco plays it below the belt and hollers, copper, you can get away into town and take a room. Nobody would find you. Lots of guys in this country on illegal entry. They make out. Like I say, Torelli, I'm not trying to advise you. But if you don't like crooked dealings, better leave and leave fast. How about it?" Torelli cocked his head up at me and grinned again. Then he squeezed my arm. "You know something? I like you. You're an honest man." That was a laugh. But who was I to argue with a dumb foreigner? I just grinned back. "Look," he mumbled. "Come, I show you why I not leave here right away now." He took me down to his little room, an ordinary little room, with a rickety old bed, a straight chair, a second-hand dresser, and a dirty rug on the floor. "Come in," he said, and I stepped inside. I wish somebody had cut my legs off instead. Torelli went to the closet and dragged out his big black suitcase. He opened it and pulled something out. A little picture in a frame. "Look," he said, and I looked. I wish somebody had torn my eyes out instead. "Rosa," he mumbled, "is my daughter. 18 years. You like?" I liked, and I said so. I wish somebody had cut my tongue off instead. But I walked into his little room and looked at the girl with the black hair and the black eyes, and I told him she was beautiful. And I sat there staring at her, and he grinned, and He spilled it all out to me. Everything. I can remember almost every word, just as I can remember almost everything that happened from that afternoon on until the end. Yeah, I learned a lot. Too much. Let me boil it down, though. About Torelli, he wasn't a Lamster in the old country. He was a professor. Sounds screwy, but the way he pitched it, I knew he was leveling with me. He was a professor in some big college over there, university. I don't know what they call it. Had to blow during the war, got as far as Cuba, got mixed up in some mess down there, and then met Big Pete Mosco's pal, Rico. Rico got him into this country, which is what he wanted, and now he was looking for a way to latch onto a bundle. I'm what you call financial embarrassed, he said. Rico, for bringing me here, take all I have, save up. This I could understand. Any pal of Big Pete Mosco would be apt to be like that, a grabber. So now I work. Mosco employs the physicist, the most eminent of metaphysicians, to rig, they say it, games of chance, ha. But I will do anything to earn money to have Rosa here. The deal was all set, I gathered. All Torelli needed to do was scrape together a G-note, and Rico would fetch Rosa on the plane. Easy as sniffing candy from a brat. So, you're saving your pennies, huh? I said, taking another look at Rosa's picture. What's Mosco paying you for this machine job? $20. $20 for a piece of work? Mosco would have to pay easy $2,000-$3,000 for if he got it done by any professional. $20 for three crooked wheels? That would pay off maybe $1,000 or more a week, clear profit? Big-hearted guy, Mr. Mosco. And at that rate, Torelli would have his Rosa over here just in time to collect on her old-age pension. I took another look at Rosa's picture and decided it wasn't fair to make poor old Torelli wait that long. Matter of fact, I didn't want to wait that long either. It wouldn't do much good to tell Torelli that Mosco was playing him for a sucker. The thing to do is figure an angle, and fast. I put Rosa's picture away. We'll work something out, I said. We got to. Thank you, said Torelli. Which is a funny thing for him to say because I was talking to the picture. I didn't have much time to talk to pictures the next couple weeks because Mosco had his roulette wheel operating and the take was good. I kept busy quieting the squawkers, hustling out the phonies, and handling the guys who were sauced up. The two hot shots he hired to handle the wheels kept rolling. Mosco was busy too, just sitting in his office and counting the take. Must have been about 2-3 weeks after the wheel went in that I happened to pass his little private back office when Torelli went in and gave him a pitch. I couldn't help but hear what they were saying, because both of them were yelling pretty loud. But you promised, Torelli was saying. Rosa, she is all alone. It's not good for a young girl to be alone. She must come here. That's your worry. Blow it out. I got things to do. Things to do like counting monies? Monies you make from the crooked wheels I fix? Never mind. Get out of here before I lose my temper. It's with plenty these jobs I do for you. Get Rosa for me. I pay you back. I work hard. Anything you say. Blow. You must do something. You must. Torelli was almost bawling now. How you like I tell somebody about crooked wheels? Listen. One peep out of you, and I tell somebody, said Big Pete Mosco. I tell somebody about a guy who sneaked into this country without a passport. Get me? You would not do these. Wait and see. Everything was quiet for a minute. The way I figured it, things would stay quiet. Mosco and Torelli, but good. If that little guy didn't watch his step, Mosco would turn him over to the feds. There was nothing anybody could do about it except... One thing more, Torelli said. Blow. No, listen. Suppose I construct for you something very special. How special? Something, how can I tell you, no one ever has before? Gambling device? Perhaps. Cost money to make? a few pennies. New, huh? Special. All right, go ahead. We'll see. Then you will send for Rosa? We'll see. Moscow let it go at that, and I didn't butt in. I was willing to see, too. And in another couple of weeks, I saw. I was there the morning Torelli took the wraps off his big secret. It was on a Sunday in Moscow, and the four Sharpies who worked his wheels for him were downstairs, divvying up the take from the big Saturday night play. Me and Al, the bartender, were sitting around in the tavern upstairs all alone, chopping the heads off a couple glasses of beer. There weren't any customers, never were on Sunday, so Al looked kind of surprised when he saw this little truck drive up and stop outside. "We got company," he said. "Company? Why, it's Torelli," I told him. Sure enough, little Torelli hopped out of the truck and made some motions to the big lug who was driving it. The lug went around back, and then he and Torelli lifted down a big weighing machine. Before I knew what was happening, they dragged it into the tavern and set up right in the corner. "Hey," says Al, "what's a big idea?" "He's no idea, he's scales, for weighing," Torelli said, turning on his grin. "Who ordered scales around here?" Al came around the bar and we walked up to the weighing machine. "I order," Torelli told him. "I promise Mr. Moscow to find something wonderful." "Don't say anything wonderful about a penny scale machine," I said, giving it a fast case. And there wasn't anything wonderful to see. It was just a regular weighing machine with a round clock face glass front and a pointer that spun up to 400 pounds, depending on who stood on it, and dropped a penny in the slot. It was made by the Universal Scale Company of Waterville, Indiana, and a decal on the back said, "This machine property of Acme Coin Machine Distributors." I noticed all this stuff kind of quick, without paying too much attention. But later, I memorized it. Checked up on it, too, when the time came, and it was all true. Just an ordinary weighing machine, made at the factory, and rented out to Moscow for $10 a month, plus 30% of the taken pennies. Oh, one other thing. Besides the big glass front over the dial showing the weight, there was another little hunk of glass and a spinner knob you turned when you dropped your penny. This knob turned about 20 slides up for fortune telling. You know the regular questions you always find at scales, like, "Will I marry rich?" Then when you dropped your penny, out comes a card with a gag answer on it like, "No, you won't marry rich, you'll marry Eddie." Corny stuff, and on top of the machine it said, "Tell your fortune 1 cent. Honest weight, no springs." Al and I looked at the scales, and the guy driving the truck went away from there. Charlie kept grinning up at us, and at last he said, "How you like?" "Phooey," said Al. "What's the matter with you, Torelli? You ought to know better than to louse up the joint with a penny machine. We got customers coming here to drop a big wad at the tables. You think they're going to fish out pennies to get their weight told?" "Yeah," I said. "Does Moscow know you ordered this?" "No," Torelli answered. "But he'll find out fast." "And he'll get sore faster," I told him. "No, he don't. You see." I'm going to hate to see Torelli. When Big Pete Moscow sees this phony fortune-telling gimmick, he'll go through the roof. He thought you were coming through as something big. "Right. These E's are the most wonderful. Wait until I fix." Torelli waved at me and went downstairs. Al and I got back to our beers. Every once in a while, Al would look over at the big, ugly, white skills in the corner and shake his head. Neither of us said anything, though. In a little while, Torelli came upstairs again. This time, he was lugging a suitcase and a big canvas tarp. He set his suitcase down right next to the scales, and then he got out a hammer and nailed up the tarp right across the corner. It hid the scales, and it hid Torelli and his suitcase. "Hey, now what are you up to?" Al yelled. "No questions, I fix. You cannot see." "Listen, you sawed-off little jerk. Who are you giving orders to around here?" Al hollered. He got up, but I held his arm. "Take it easy," I said. "Give the little guy a chance. He's doing this for Moscow, remember? Maybe he's got some angle. Look what he did for the wheels." "All right. What's the big idea of the tarpaulin?" secret, Torelli called out. Nobody must know. 3 weeks of work to do. He's a miracle. You see, we didn't see anything. We didn't even hear much of anything. Some banging and clanking around, but not much. I guess Torelli was working on the weighing machine with special tools from his suitcase, but I couldn't figure the angle. All I know is he worked on and on, and Al and I kept drinking beers and waiting for Big Pete Mosco to come upstairs and bust up the act. But Mosco must have been plenty busy counting the take. He didn't show. And the fidgeting went on behind the curtain until Al and I were going screwy trying to figure things out. I got it, Al says at last. Sure, I got it. Plain as daylight. Torelli fixed the wheels downstairs for the big-time marks, didn't he? Well, this for the little sucker, Mr. Bates, who comes in upstairs for a drink. We worked the old routine on him, see? Plant the steerer at the bar. Get him into an argument about what he weighs. Work him into a bet. 5, 10, 20 bucks. I hold the dough, get it? Then we take him over to the scales. Mr. Bates knows what he weighs, because before the show down the steerer goes away to wash his hands, and I say to Mr. Bates, quick, hop on the scales before he gets back. Then we'll know what you weigh for sure. So the chump weighs himself, and let's say he weighs 165. The steerer comes back, and this time Mr. Bates offers a double or triple a bet. He can't lose, see? So the steerer falls for it, and we have Mr. Bates for 50 or 100 bucks. Then we weigh him official. And of course, the scale says 170 or 175. Whatever I want, because I got my foot down the pedal that fixes the scale. Get it? A natural. Somehow it didn't seem like such a natural to me. In the first place, no, Mr. Bates was going to be dumb enough not to see through the routine with the crooked scales. And he raised a holy stink about being cleaned. Secondly, Torelli had promised Mosco something really wonderful. And for some funny reason, I had faith in Torelli. I knew he was working to get Rosa over here, and he'd do anything for her. After seeing her picture, I could understand that. No, I expected Torelli to come through. A big scientist, physicist, or whatever kind of professor he was, in the old country would do better than fix a weighing machine. So I waited to see what would happen when Torelli finished and took the tarp down. Finally he did, and I saw exactly nothing. Torelli ripped down the canvas, carried his big bag downstairs, and left the scales standing there exactly like before. I know, because Al and I rushed up to look at the machine. Only two things were changed, and you had to look pretty hard to realize that much. First of all, the little selector knob you could spin to choose your fortune-telling question just didn't spin anymore. And second, the small glass-covered opening above it, which gave the questions, was now blank instead of printed questions like, will I marry Rich? There was now a sort of black dish behind the glass. It kind of moved when you got up close to it, as it was a mirror, only black. I know that sounds screwy, and it was screwy, but that's the only way I can describe it. It was a little black disc that sort of caught your reflection when you stood on the scales. Only, of course, you can't get a reflection off something dull and black. But it was as if the scales were looking at you. I hopped up and fished around for a penny. Closer I stood, the more I felt like something or somebody inside the scales was giving me a cold, fishy stare. Yes. And there was, come to think of it, a soft humming noise when I stood on the platform, deep down humming from inside. I went around back and said, little jerk, opened up the machinery here all right. Soldered the back on tight again, though. Wonder what he was up to. Coin company's gonna squawk when they see this. I found my penny and got ready to drop it in. I could see my reflection in the big glass dial where the weight pointer was. I had a kind of funny grin, but I guess that came from looking at the big back disc below and listening to the humming and wondering about the wonderful thing Torelli had done. I held my penny over the slot and Big Pete Mosco come running up the stairs. Torelli was right behind him, and right behind Torelli were the four Sharpies. "What's the pitch?" Moscow yelled. "Get off the machine and throw it out of here." I got off the machine fast. If I hadn't, Moscow would have knocked me off. "Wait," Torelli chattered. "Wait, you see? He's what I promised you. Wonderful." "Scales?" Moscow grabbed Torelli by the collar and shook him until his hair flopped all over his face. "What do I need with scales?" "But they tell fortunes." "Tell fortunes?" Moscow began to shake Torelli until it looked like his hair would be torn right out from his head. "What do I need with phony fortunes? It's not phony, fortunes like you say. That is the wonderful. The fortunes, they are true." "True?" Moscow was still yelling, but the shaking stopped. He put Torelli down and stared at him hard. Torelli managed another one of his grins. "Yes, true. You get on machine. You put in penny, fortune card comes out. It's really true fortune. Tell your future." "Malarkey." One of the Sharpies' character named Don started to laugh. He was a lanky blonde guy with buck teeth and he looked like a horse. In a minute we were all laughing. All but Torelli. "Take it easy, Torelli," said Don, grinning and sticking out his big yellow teeth. He walked over to the little old man and stood looking down at him. It was funny to see the two of them together. Torelli in his old overalls and this Sharpie Don in a handsome set of threads. New blue pinstripe job that matched the color of his convertible parked outside in the driveway. It was funny and then it wasn't so funny. Because the grin on Don's face was mean. And I knew he was just working up to something nasty. "Look, Torelli," Don said, still grinning. "Maybe you're a big scientist back in the University of Bologna or wherever you come from. But for my money over here, you're just a schmo, see? And I never heard that any scientist could invent a machine that really reads a person's future." Don reached down and patted Torelli on the shoulder. "Now you know Mr. Moscow here's a busy man," he said. "So if you've got something else to say, spit it out fast-like. Then I won't waste any more time before I kick you out in the road." "Huh?" Moscow grunted. "I got no time for screwballs at all, Don. Tell him what's going to happen to you by science." "He's not science." Torelli talked real soft and looked at the floor. "Not science?" "No. I do anything to get Rosa here, remember? I tell you that. I do what science cannot do. I make pact. Make vow. Make bargain." "What kind of a bargain? With who?" "I not say. My business, huh? But it work, so I can build what I need for machine. It's not science work here. It's magic." "What the?" Moscow's yelling at him, but Torelli's soft voice cut him right off. "Magic," he repeated. "Black magic. I don't care who you are, what you are. You get on scales. Scales read your soul, your past. See you like you really are. Drop pennies. Scales tell your fortune. Read your future. Here, try it. You see?" Then Don cut loose with his hoarse laugh. Only this time he laughed alone. When he shut up, Torelli turned to Moscow again. "Understand what I tell you? These scales read the future. Tell anybody's fortune. He's worth much money to have here. You can make big business from these. Now you get Rosa for me." "Sure," said Moscow. "I'll get Rosa. If it works. Hey, Torelli, what you got on the machine and see if it tells your fortune about Rosa? Maybe it'll say she's coming, huh?" Moscow was ribbing him, but Torelli didn't know it. He turned kind of pale and stepped back. "Oh no, Mr. Moscow, not me. I not get on these machines for anything. He's cursed black magic. I do it only for Rosa. But I fear." "Well, what are we all wasting time standing around for?" Don snickered. "Torelli's chicken. Afraid he'll get on the scale and nothing will happen. So we boot him out. Well, I'm not scared. Here, give me that." He snatched the penny out of my hand, hopped on the scales, and slid the penny down. I could hear the faint humming, and then when the penny disappeared, I could hear the humming a little louder. The black disc on the scales got cloudy for a second. The pointer on the big dial behind the glass swung over to 182. Don stood on the scales, 182 pounds of what the well-dressed man will wear, including his nasty grin. So he shrugged. Nothing happens. There was a click, and a little white card slid out of the slot below the black dish. Don picked it up and read it. He shook his head and passed the card to Moscow, and the others eventually it got to me. It was a plain white card with plain lettering on it, but it wasn't regular printing, more like a mimeograph in black ink that was still damp. I read it twice. When the black cat crosses your path, you die. That's all it said. The old superstition, kid stuff. Kid stuff, Don sneered. Tell you what, this faker must have gummed up the machinery in the scale and put in a lot of phony new fortune-telling cards of his own. He's crazy. Torelli shook his head. Please, he said, you don't like me. Well, I don't like you much. But even so, I give you the warning. Watch out for black cats. Scale said black cat going to bring you death. Watch out. Don shrugged. You handle this deal, Moscow, he said. I got no more time to waste. Heavy date this afternoon. Moscow looked at him. Just make sure you don't get loaded. I need you at the tables tonight. I'll be here, Don said from the doorway. Unless some mangy alley cat sneaks up and conks me over the head with a club. For a little while, nobody said anything. Torelli tried to smile at me, but it didn't go over. He tugged at Moscow's sleeve, but Moscow ignored him. He stared at Don. We all stared at Don. We watched him climb into his convertible and back out of the driveway. We watched him give it the gun and we hit the road. We watched him race by towards town. We watched the black cat come out of nowhere and scoot across the highway. Watched Don yank the wheel to swerve out of its path. Watched the car zoom off to one side towards the ditch. Watched it crash into the culvert, then turn a somersault and go rolling over and over and over into the gully. There was running and yelling and swearing and tugging and hauling, and finally we found all that was left of 182 pounds and a brand new suit under the weight of that wrecked convertible. We never saw Don's grin again, and we never saw the cat again either. But Torelli pointed out the fortune-telling card and smiled. And that afternoon, Big Pete Moscow phoned Rigo to bring Rosa to America. She arrived on Saturday night. Rigo brought her from the plane. Big Rigo, with his waxed mustache and plastered down hair, with his phony diamond ring and his phony polo coat that told everybody what he was, just as if he had a post office reader pinned to his back. But I didn't pay any attention to Rigo. I was looking at Rosa. There was nothing phony about her black hair, her white skin, her red mouth. There was nothing phony about the way she threw herself into Torelli's arms, kissing the little man and crying for joy. It was quite a reunion downstairs in the back room, and even though she paid no attention when she was introduced to me, I felt pretty good about it all. It had something to me just to watch her smiling and laughing a few minutes later while she talked to her old man. Al, the bartender, and the Sharpie stood around and grinned at each other, too, and I guess they felt the same way I did. But Big Pete Moscow felt different. He looked at Rosa, too, and he did his share of grinning. But he wasn't grinning at her. He was grinning at something inside himself. Something came alive in Moscow, and I could see it. Something that waited to grab and paw and rip and tear at Rosa. It's going to be nice having you, he told her. We got to get acquainted. I must thank you for making this possible, she said, in her soft little voice. The kid spoke good English, grammar and everything, and you could tell she had class. My father and I are very, very grateful. I don't know how we are going to repay you. We'll talk about that later, said Big Pete Moscow, licking his lips and letting his hands curl and uncurl into fists. But right now, you gotta excuse me, looks like a heavy night for business. Torelli and Rosa disappeared into his room to have supper off a tray Al brought down. Moscow went out to the big downstairs pitch to case the tables for the night's play. Rigo hung around for a while, kidding with the wheel operators. I caught him mumbling in the corner and dragged him upstairs for a drink. That's where Moscow found us a couple minutes later. Rigo gave him the office. "How's about the dough?" he said. "Sure, sure, just a minute." Moscow hauled out a roll and peeled off a slice for Rigo. I saw it 5 C's, and it gave me a bad time to watch Rigo take the money because I knew Moscow wouldn't hand out 500 bucks without getting plenty in return. And I knew what he wanted in return. Rosa. "Hey, what's the big idea of this?" Rigo asked, pointing over at the skills in the corner. I didn't say anything. I wondered if Moscow would spill. All week long, the weighing machine had stood there with a sign on it, out of order. Moscow had lettered the day after Don got killed, and he made sure nobody got their fortunes told. Nobody talked about the scales, and I kept wondering if Moscow was going to yank the machine out of the place or use it, or what he had in the back of his head. But Moscow must have figured Rigo was one of the family, seeing as how he flew in illegal immigrants and all, because he told Rigo the whole story. There wasn't many around the bar yet that early, or Saturday night players generally got in about 10 or so, and Moscow yapped without worrying about listeners. "So help me, it's truth," he told Rigo. "Machine will tell just what's going to happen to your future. For a stinking penny." Rigo laughed. "Don't give me that con," he said. "Business with Don and the cat was just, what you call it, coincidence?" "Yeah. Well, you couldn't get me on those skills for $1 million, brother," Moscow told him. "Maybe so, but I'm not scared of any machine in the world," Rigo snorted. "Here, watch me." And he walked over to the scales and dropped a penny. The pointer went up, 177. The black disc gleamed. I heard the humming and the click, and out came the white card. Rigo looked at it and grinned. I didn't crack a smile. I was thinking of Don. But Rigo chuckled and handed the card round for all of us to see. It said, "You will win with red." "Good enough," he said, waving the card under Moscow's nose. "Now, if I was a sucker, I'd go downstairs and bet this 500 smackers on one of your crooked wheels, red to win. If I was a superstitious jerk, that is." Moscow shrugged. "Suit yourself," he said. "Look, customers, I gotta get busy." He walked away. I got busy myself then. The marks started to arrive and it looked like a big Saturday night. I didn't get downstairs until after midnight, and that was the first time I noticed that Rigo must have kidded himself into believing the card after all, because he was playing the wheel and playing it big. A new guy named Spencer had come in to replace Don, and he was handling the house and on this particular setup. A big crowd was standing round the rig, watching Rigo place his bets. Rigo had a stack of chips a foot high, and he was playing them fast, and winning. I must have watched him for about 15 minutes, and during that time he raked in over 3 G's, cold. Played odds, played numbers, played red and played black too. Won almost every spin. Moscow was watching too. I saw him signal Spencer the time Rigo put down a full G in blue chips on black to win. I saw Spencer wink at Moscow, but I saw the wheel stop on black. Moscow was ready to bust, but what could he do? A crowd of marks was watching. It had to look legit. A few more spins and Rigo had about 6 or 7 G's in chips in front of him. Then Moscow stepped in and took the table away from Spencer. "See you in my office," he mumbled, and Spencer nodded. He stared at Rigo, but Rigo only smiled and said, "Excuse me, I'm cashing in." Moscow looked at me and said, "Tail him." They shook his head. "Don't get it," he said. He was working the wire now, finding everything in order. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Rigo over at the cashier's window, counting currency and stuffing into his pockets. Spencer had disappeared. Rigo began walking upstairs, his legs scissoring fast. I followed, hefting the brass knuckles in my pocket. Rigo went outside, I went outside. He heard my feet behind him on the gravel and turned around. Hey, I said, what's your hurry? Rigo just laughed and he winked. That wink was the last thing I saw before everything exploded. I went down the gravel and I didn't get up for about a minute. Then, when I was just in time to see the car pull away with Rigo waving at me, still laughing, the guy who had sapped me was now at the wheel of the car. I recognized Spencer. It's a frame, is it? Big Pete Moscow had come up from downstairs and was standing behind me, spitting out pieces of his cigar. If I'd know what those dirty rats would pull on me. He was working with Spencer to trim me. You did know, I reminded him. Did I? Sure. Remember what the fortune-telling card said? Told Rigo you will win with red, didn't it? But Rigo was winning with both colors, Moscow yelled. It was that dog Spencer who let him win. That's what the card said, I told him. What you and I forgot is that red is Spencer's nickname. We went back inside because there was nothing else to do. No way of catching Rigo or Spencer without rough stuff, and Moscow couldn't afford that. Moscow went back to the tables and took the suckers for a couple of hours straight, but it didn't make him any happier. He was still in a lousy temper the next morning when he cut up the week's take. It was probably the worst time in the world to talk to him about anything, and that's, of course, where Torelli made his mistake. I was sitting downstairs when Torelli came in with Rosa and said, please, Mr. Moscow. What you want? Moscow would have yelled it if Rosa hadn't been there, looking cool and sweet in a black dress that curved in and out and in again. I want to know, Rosa and I. We can go now.
Go?
Yes. Away from here. Into town to stay. For Rosa to get job, go to school nights, maybe?
You ain't going no place, Torelli.
But you have what you wish, no? I fix machines. I make for you the marvelous scale of fortune. Bring you luck.
Luck?
Rosa or no Rosa, Moscow began to yell. He stood up and shoved his purple face right against Torelli's button nose. Luck, huh? You and your lousy machine. And 1 week it kills my best wheelman and lets another one frame me with Rigo for over $7,000. That's the kind of luck you bring me with your magic. You're going to stick here, Torelli, like I say, unless you want Uncle Sam on your tail, but fast. Please, Mr. Moscow, you let Rosa go alone, huh?
Not on your life, he grinned then. I wouldn't let a nice girl like Rosa go up into town without nobody to protect her.
Don't you worry about Rosa, Torelli. Got plans for her, lots of plans. Moscow turned back to the table and his money. Now, blow and leave me alone, he said. They left. I went along too because I didn't like to leave Rosa out of my sight now. What is this all about, Father? Rosa asked the question softly as we all three of us sat in Torelli's little room. Torelli looked at me and shrugged. Tell her, I said, you must. So Torelli explained about being here legally and about the phony roulette wheels. But the machines, the scales of fortune, what do you mean by this? Again, Torelli looked at me. I didn't say anything. He sighed and stared down at the floor, but at last he told her. A lot of it I didn't understand. About photoelectric cells and mirrors and a tripping lever he was supposed to have invented. About books with funny names and drawing circles and rooster blood and something called evocations or invocations or whatever they call it. And about a bargain with Satanás, whoever that is. That must have been the magic part. I guessed it was, because of the way Rosa acted when she heard it. She turned pale and began to stare and breathe funny. And she stood up and shook Torelli's shoulder. No, you did not do this thing. You couldn't. It is evil, and you know the price. Necromancy, that is all I can turn to get you here. Torelli said, I'd do anything for you, Rosa. No cost too much. It is evil, Rosa said. It must not be permitted. I will destroy it.
of Moscow. He owns the machine now. You cannot, he said himself. It brought bad luck. He will never know. I will place it with another scale, an ordinary one, from the same place you got this. But your secret, the fortune-telling mechanism, must go. Rosa, I said, you can't. He's a dangerous customer. Look, why don't you and your old man scram out of here today? I'll handle Moscow somehow. He'll be sore, sure, but I'll cool him off. You can hide out in town and I'll join you later. Please, Rosa, listen to me. Look, kid, I'll level with you. I'm crazy about you. I'll do anything for you. That's why I want you to go. Leave Moscow to me. She smiled then and stared up into my eyes. She stood very close and I could smell her hair. Almost she touched me and then she shook her head. You are a good man, she said. It is a brave thing you propose. But I cannot go. Not yet. Not while that machine of evil still exists. It will bring harm into the world. For my father did a wicked thing when he trafficked with darkness to bring it into being. He did it for me. So I must destroy it. But how? When? Tonight, Rosa said. Tomorrow we'll order a new scale brought in. But we must remove the old one tonight. Torelli, I said, could you put the regular parts back in this machine if you take out the new stuff? Yes. Then that's what we'll do. Too dangerous to try a switch. Just stick the old fortune-telling gimmick back in and maybe we can get by for a while without Moscow noticing. He won't be letting anybody near it now for a while, after what happened. Good, said Torelli. We find a time. Tonight, Rosa repeated, there must be no more cursed fortunes told. But she was wrong. She was wrong about a lot of things, like Moscow not having any use for the fortune-telling skills, for instance. He lied when he told Torelli the machine was useless. I found that out later the same afternoon, when Moscow cornered me upstairs in the bar. He'd been drinking a little and trying to get over his grouch about the stolen money. I'll get it back, he said. Got a gold mine here. Biggest gold mine in a country. Only nobody knows it yet but you and me. He laughed, and the bottles rattled behind the bar. If that dumb guy could only figure it, he'd go crazy. Something worked up for the fortune telling, I needled. Sure. Look. I get rich customers in here, plenty of them. Lay lots of dough on the line downstairs. Gamblers, plungers, superstitious. You see them come in, rattling lucky charms and rabbit's foot and four-leaf clovers. Playing numbers like 7 and 13 on hunches. What you think? Wouldn't they pay plenty for a chance to know what's going to happen to them tomorrow or next year? Why, it's natural. That's what I can charge plenty to give him a fortune from his scales. Tell you what, I'm going to have a whole new setup just for this deal. Tomorrow we build a new special room, way in back. I got a pitch figured out, how to work it. We'll set the scales up tomorrow, lock the door of the new room, and then we really operate. I listened and nodded, thinking about how there wasn't going to be any tomorrow, just tonight. I did my part. I kept pouring the drinks into Moscow and after supper, he had me drive him into town. There wasn't any play on the wheels on Monday, and Moscow usually hit town his night off to relax. His idea of relaxation was a little poker game with the boys from the city hall, and tonight I was hot to join him. We played almost until 1, and I kept him interested as long as I could, knowing that Rosa and Torelli would be working on the machine back at the tavern, but it couldn't last forever, and then we were driving back. And Big Pete Moscow was mumbling next to me in the dark. Only the beginning, boy, he said. Gonna make a million off that, Scales. Talk about fortunes. I got one when I got hold of Torelli. 1 million smackers and the girl. Hey, watch it! I almost drove the car off the road when he mentioned the girl. I wish I had now. Torelli's a brainy apple, Moscow mumbled. Dumb but brainy. You know what I mean? I bet you he's got some other cute tricks up his sleeve, too. What you think? You believe that stuff about magic? Or is it just a machine? I don't know, I told him. I don't know nothing about science or magic either. All I know is it works, and it gives me the creeps just to think about it. The scales sort of look at you, size you up, and then give you a payoff. And it always comes true. I began to pitch then. Moscow, that thing's dangerous. It can make you a lot of trouble. You saw what it did to Don, and what happened to you when Rico had his fortune told. Why don't you get rid of it before something else happens? Why don't you let Torelli and Rosa go and forget about it? You going soft in the head? Moscow grabbed my shoulder, and I almost went off the road again. Leave go $1 million in a machine that tells the truth about the future? Not me, buddy. And I want Torelli, too. But most of all, I want Rosa. And I'm gonna get her. Soon. Maybe. Tonight? What I wanted to do to Big Pete Moscow would have pinned the murder rap on me for sure. I had to have time to think, to figure out some other angle. So I kept driving until we pulled up outside the dark entrance to the tavern. Everything was quiet, and I couldn't see any light, so I figured whatever Rosa and Torelli had done was finished. We got out in Moscow and locked the front door. We walked in. Then everything happened at once. I heard the clicking noise from the corner. Moscow heard it too. He yelled and grabbed at something in the dark. I heard a crash, heard Torelli curse in Italian. Moscow stepped back. No, you don't, he hollered. He had a gun. The gun had a bullet. The bullet had a target. That's all. Moscow shot. There was a scream and a thud, and then I got the lights on, and I could see. I could see Torelli standing there next to the scales. I could see the tools scattered around, and I could see the queer-looking hunk of flashing mirrors. That must have been Torelli's secret machinery. I could see the old back of the scales already screwed into place again. But I didn't look at these things, and neither did Moscow. And neither did Torelli. We looked at Rosa lying on the floor. Rosa looked back, but she didn't see us because she had a bullet between her eyes. Dad, Torelli screamed. You murdered her. Moscow blinked, but he didn't move. How was I to know, he said. Thought somebody was busting into the place. What's the big idea, anyhow? He's no idea. You murder her. Moscow had his angle figured now. He sneered down at Torelli. You're fine well to talk, you lousy little crook. I caught you in the act, didn't I? Trying to steal the works. That's what you were doing. Now get busy and put that machinery back into the scales before I blow your brains out. Torelli looked at Moscow, then at Rosa. All at once he shrugged and picked the little box of mirrors and flashing discs from the floor. It was small, but from the way he hefted it, I could tell it was heavy. When he held it, it hummed, and the mirrors began to slide every which way, and it hurt my eyes to look at it. Torelli lifted the box full of science, the box full of magic, whatever it was. The box of secrets, the box of the future. Then he smiled at Moscow and opened his arms. The box smashed to the floor. There was a crash and smoke and a bright light. Then the noise of smoke and light went away, and there was nothing but old Torelli standing and a little pile of twisted wires and broken glass and tubes. Moscow raised his gun. Torelli stared straight into the muzzle and grinned. You murder me now. Go ahead, Mr. Moscow. Rosa dead. The fortune-telling machine dead, too. And I do not wish to stay alive, either. Part of me dies with Rosa, and the rest was machine. Machine? I whispered under my breath. But he heard me. Yes. Part of me wanted to make machine. What you call the soul. Moscow tightened his finger on the trigger. Never mind that, you crummy little rat. You can't scare me with none of that phony talk about magic. I don't scare you. You're too stupid to understand. But before I die, I tell you one thing more. I tell you fortune, and your fortune is death. You die too, Mr. Moscow. You die too. Like a flash, Torelli stooped and grabbed the wrench from the tool at his feet. He lifted it and swung, and then Moscow let him have it. three slugs in a row. Torelli toppled over next to Rosa. I stepped forward. I don't know what I'd have done next. Jumped to Moscow, tried to kill him with his own gun. I was in a daze. Moscow turned around and barked. Quit staring, he said. Help me clean up this mess and get rid of them fast. Or do you want to get tied up and as an accessory for murder? That word, murder. It stopped me cold. Moscow was right. I'd be in on the deal if they found the bodies. Rosa was dead. Torelli was dead. The scales and their secret was gone. So I helped Moscow. I helped him clean up, and I helped him load the bodies into the car. He didn't ask me to go along with him on the trip, and that was good, because it gave me a chance, after he'd gone, to go to the phone and ring up the sheriff. It gave me a chance to tell the sheriff and the two deputies a whole story when they came out to the tavern early in the morning. It gave me a chance to see Big Pete Moscow's face when he walked in and found us waiting for him there. They collared him and accused him, and he denied everything. He must have hid the bodies in a good safe place to pull a front act like that, but he never cracked. He denied everything, my story, the murders, the works. Look at him, he told the sheriff, pointing at me. He's shaking like a leaf, out of his head. Everybody knows he's punchy. Why, the guy's off his rocker, spilling a yarn like that. Magic scales that tell your fortune. Ever hear of such a thing? Why, that alone ought to show you the guy's slug nutty. Funny thing is, I could see him getting to them. The sheriff and his buddies began to give me a look out of the corner of their eyes. First of all, said Moscow, there was no such person as Torelli, and he never had a daughter. Look around. See if you can find anything that looks like we had a fight in here, let alone a double murder. All you see is the scales here. The rest this guy made up out of his cracked head. About those scales, the sheriff began. Moscow walked over and put his hand on the side of the big glass dial. On top of the scales, bold as you please. Yeah, what about the scales, he asked. Look 'em over, just ordinary scales. See for yourself. Drop a penny, out comes a fortune. Regular stuff. Wait, I'll show you. We all looked up Moscow as he climbed up on the scales and fumbled in his pocket for a penny. I saw the deputies edge closer to me, just waiting for the payoff. And I gulped, because I knew the magic was gone. Torelli had put the regular works back into the scales, and it was just an ordinary weighing machine now. Honest weight, no springs. Moscow would dial a fortune, and one of the regular printed cards would come out. We'd hidden the bodies, cleaned up Torelli's room, removed his clothing, the tools, everything. No evidence left, and nobody would talk except me. And who would believe me with my crazy guff about a magic scales that told the real future? They'd lock me up in the nut house fast when Moscow got off the scales with his fortune told for a penny. I heard the click when the penny dropped. The dial behind the glass went up to 297 pounds. Big fat Moscow turned and grinned at all of us. You see, he said. Then it happened. Maybe he was clumsy. Maybe there was oil on the platform. Maybe there was a ghost and it pushed him. I don't know. All I know is that Moscow slipped, leaned forward to catch himself, and rammed his head against the glass top. He gurgled once and went down with a 2-foot razor of glass ripping across his throat. As he fell, he tried to smile and one pudgy hand fumbled at the side of the scales, grabbing out the printed slip that told Big Pete Moscow's fortune. We had to pry that slip out of his hands, pry it out and read the dead man's future. Maybe it was just an ordinary scale now, but it told Moscow's fortune for sure. You figure it out. All I know is what I read. All I know is that Torelli's scale told Moscow about what was going to happen and what did happen. The big white scale stood grinning down on the dead man, and for a minute the cracked and splintered glass sort of fell into a pattern, and I had the craziest feeling that I could see Torelli's face. He was grinning, the scale was grinning, and we didn't grin. We just pried a little printed slip out of Big Pete Moscow's hand and read his future, written there. It was just a single sentence, but it said all there was to be said. you are going on a long journey.